This is a Huey Booker production. Welcome to The Book of Huey, featuring our host, Huey Booker, a.k.a. Huelito, a.k.a. El Grande Papi Julito, a.k.a. Lil Big Daddy, the original faux Dominican, the king of unfuckwittability in all of his regal debonair godliness. With his stunner shades, receding hairline, and struggle beard alike, took a risk and launched the Book of Huey podcast. Huey has the dopest, funniest, most insightful conversations with his friends. And within all the shenanigans and jokes, there are frequent profound moments and lots of quotable gems. And yet the idea that other folks could benefit from, or at the very least, be highly amused by listening in on these convos. He created a safe, judgment-free space to discuss love, sex, life, dating, relationships, fuckery, and advice with raw honesty and humor. This is your announcer, Rebecca Lee. So, this is what had happened previously on The Book of Huey. We heard you, ladies. We've met, convened, and finally did it, y'all, and got another brother on the show. LC of the popular ICan'tBeFamous.com came through. The Book of Huey, Chapter 2, Verse 4, Black Men Speak, Volume 1, Legacy. He and our host, the regal debonair god himself, had an insightful conversation about life, love, marriage, fatherhood, and the box office busting motion feature cult classic Black Panther, which is currently doing numbers and setting records worldwide. Wakanda forever. This is your announcer, Rebecca Lee. And now on to our host, Huey Booker, featuring this week's guest and my friend, Suzette Crichton, founder of Ephemidis.
What up, what up, what up? As you heard from your announcer, Rebecca Lee, this is your host, Huey Booker, a.k.a. Julito, a.k.a. Lil Big Daddy, a.k.a. El Grande Papi Chulito, the regal debonair god and the king of unfuckwittability. Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of the Book of Huey podcast. Be sure to check us out at thebookofhuey.com. You can subscribe and tune in on iTunes, Google Play Music, YouTube, Stitcher, Blueberry, SoundCloud, and CastBox. Follow us all at The Book of Huey on Facebook. We have a fan page, a discussion group. We're also on Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, and Ask FM. For this week's episode, Inventing Black Sex, we have guest host Suzette Crichton. She's a self-proclaimed anime geek, funds her habit for travel via her career as a healthcare consultant, as well as the founder and owner of Ephemidis. Ephemidis is a lifestyle brand that promotes a range of products and experiences to facilitate participation in the BDSM sexual environment. She continues to collaborate with wolves, unicorns, sirens, and occasionally sloths in their shared quest for world domination. I fuck with that. Having a background in forensics and clinical psychology definitely helps. So thank you, Suzette, for being on the show. How you doing, baby?
I am always doing well. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you for asking. So the regal debonair god wants to know, beyond everything that I just said, tell us more about you and why you decided to be on our show today.
So I decided to be on your show, one, because I'm absolutely amazing. So I feel like just my base amazingness will bleed into the Book of Huey.
I love it.
No, it was really because one of the missions behind what Ephemidis is trying to do is about creating opportunities, creating dialogue, changing the narrative that is said about Black sexuality in all of its guises. And so that's kind of, it very much aligns with what you have started as far as the dialogue tied to the Book of Huey. So I feel we're going to talk about relationships and love and all these other things, and we might as well have someone with a perspective that can change what we have been doing into something better. So that's why I'm here.
I like that. Now, Before we get into, you know, the nuts and bolts of a feminist and introduce it to the world, tell us the meaning behind the name. Like, does it hold any particular meaning for you? And pretend I don't already know the answer to this shit, because I do.
I can do that. I can do that. So, a feminist was created out of my own perspective as a Afro-Caribbean woman in Jamaican patois. When you want to say that this is mine or something belongs, you will say a feminist. So it became a play on words, as what I'm hoping that it will do is to empower people to step into sexual and sensual spaces, or spaces tied to love and sex, in that spirit of this is mine. This is your experience. So you should play a role in how it's created. You have a voice in the experience that you have, and that everyone's perspective into that is respected. So that's where feminist came from.
I love that shit. Now, given your background in forensics and clinical psychology, you know, not only did you go through a number of years to get your degrees and certifications, but you also have many years of clinical experience working with patients and, I believe, what, individual and family practice, right?
Yeah, so pretty much, you know, I learned very quickly into my clinical experience that I prefer to work with adults and couples. Many of my friends went into dealing with children and other specialties, but I was always intrigued with the dynamics that can occur between people. You know, dealing with children takes a particular skill set, because for a lot of the experience of children, their parents still shape so much of what they are and are not able to do. Like, you know, if you're a 13-year-old, there's really not much you can do about who your mother is or who your father is and maintaining a relationship with them. That comes with adulthood. So that was a challenge for me, and it led me to where my friends kind of worked on the front end. I figured, okay, well, once you come through to adulthood and you have some of those hurts that you need healing, I can help you then, because I believe empowerment and choice are a huge part of healing. And if you're going to step into an intimate space and going to connect with someone, there's a certain amount of power that comes with that. And you have to be in a place where you're willing and able to use that power.
I'm actually glad you brought that up about having safe spaces, feeling empowered, building intimate connections, because I want to build off what you just said about, you know, the name of your brand and the reason why you started it. So, again, I understand that the play on words, the cultural relevance, but also when I asked you about why you started a feminist, you told me that you wanted to create something that could fill the gap between what you saw and experienced and what you also saw as being offered to people of color in the BDSM space. So how does a feminist, particularly, like you said, this is for me, how do you take all of what you've experienced, particularly with your background in clinical psychology and forensics, how do you bring that all to a feminist?
So one of the things that I developed a deep appreciation for is the impact that imagery and stories and art and literature all play in our experience of humanity. So there were often times with patients who I may have had who may have been struggling with an issue, using books or movies or stories to give context to help them understand and normalize an experience that they're going through. And we all kind of do it. Think about, you know, when you had that rough breakup, you know, watching that romantic comedy that, you know, kind of plays on those very themes, you know, that sort of thing. And so in the BDSM world, I found a lot of personal empowerment. Not just because of my perspective, but because of just the nature of how kink works and the space of acceptance, the space of safety and consent, the acknowledgement of that there are many things that someone can find arousing. And as long as the people who are participating are fully engaged and have given full consent, that it's all good. And so you go from a space like that and you go out into the wider world. And when you look at the imagery that speaks to BDSM, it tends to be very white. When you look at the issues people have, it tends to be coached and centered on whiteness. And not really, and I can't say that it's with any malicious intent. it's kind of how the community evolved. So yes, there's plenty of Black people that are involved in kink, in all manner of kinks. There are Black subs, there are Black doms, there are Black people who like flogging, there are those who like all kinds of other stuff. But if you were to do a Google search, or you go to a convention, or you go to a play party, or whatever the case may be, you definitely see a lot more non-Black people in those spaces than you see Black people. And when I first moved to the DC area, it was a culture shock in a variety of ways. But one of the ways that really stood out to me was that there were so many false narratives that are put forward about people who engage in kink activities, who might have a predilection for playing, you know, all those kinds of things. The kinds of comments and descriptions of what I've heard were really kind of wonky. Even the use of some of the terms, like you would see people saying things like, well, I don't want someone to fetishize me. And I'm like, okay, the fact that you're even using that word in that context means that you're coming from a place where having a fetish is a bad thing, or that having a characteristic that's an element of desire is seen as somehow limiting, as opposed to it being, no, for someone who has a fetish, it is a particular desire that's needed for arousal. Just seeing someone in a sexual light does not mean that you've been fetishized. Now, if someone cannot have an erection unless you're there, well, then we can talk about whether you're a fetish or not.
You know, it's interesting you brought up that last point, because the second episode that we did back in 2017, I'm Not Your Fetish Bitch, was actually because someone had wrote in, told us about an experience that they had, because she was an Afro-Latina who felt as though she was being sexually objectified with the hot Latina stereotype, and she was, not to say rebelling against it, but she was basically trying to tell that individual, like, you know, I am more than just this fantasy you're trying to make me into outside of the bedroom. That was kind of what led to that episode, so I'm glad you provided some clarity and context about the differences and what it means.
There is, you know, to interject there, that I definitely see there being a difference between someone sexually objectifying and minimizing the humanity of someone versus someone who is who relishes a fetish or who has a fetish. And by mixing the terms, I feel that it does a disservice to people who have true fetishes for whatever reason versus someone who is trying to say, I recognize and I see that you have these stereotypes and these beliefs about what my sexual self is. And I deserve to have someone that can recognize and appreciate the whole of my humanity separate from what you think I am sexually. But when you call that a fetish, then you're taking away the power from someone who says, yes, there is a particular sexual experience that I'm looking for. And if I find someone who is willing and consenting to that process, and we are not harming each other directly or indirectly, then why is their desire wrong?
Well, let me ask you then, because I'm thinking about, you know, the research that I've done and the vision that you set out for a feminist, and you wrote to create inclusive, safe spaces for luxurious sensory explorations. Now, I definitely love the alliteration there and the play on words. So tell me, if you have someone who, and I'm going to use this word, and it might turn off some people, but I'm going to use it in the true sense of its Webster definition. If you have someone who's ignorant of the correct usage and the context of these terms, but they're curious, or even if they sort of reject the experiences that you're trying to put forth, how would you, or how do you in your day-to-day life, you know, building this brand and not just building it, I mean, you're already having events and you already have consultations. How do you continue to preach the gospel, so to speak? Oh, I should have used another term. Let me think of it.
Well, you know, as much as I'm a heathen, yes, there is a gospel element to it. I would say that one of the things that I do just as an individual is to try to live very transparently in my values. And one of the things that I strive very much to recreate is that sense of safety. It's the fact that is creating a space that allows people to discuss whatever their sexual interests or proclivities or curiosities may be. And there is nothing wrong with being sexually ignorant. We all start from a place of not necessarily knowing what our physical bodies can do for us, what kind of pleasure we can receive, how we receive that pleasure. And that evolves over time as well. So what you desired and what you wanted at 16 may probably different than what you wanted at 22, which is different from what you want at 34, which is different from what you want at 58. Our lives evolve. We evolve as people. The relationships that we're in evolve us. And so it's about taking the judgment and taking the fear outside of the sexual arena. I have very few rules, and my rule, it's kind of like the medical profession. First, do no harm. If you are of consenting age and consenting abilities and you are in a space with someone else, as long as you are not hurting or diminishing each other's fullness of humanity, then there is no reason why we cannot dialogue about it. And part of it comes from practicing what I preach and being that person that is very open and will consider all realms without having necessarily a knee-jerk reaction.
I'm so glad you just said that, because, I mean, that's one of the key elements or foundational tenets of this show. I plan to talk about a lot of quote-unquote taboo issues here, because I think we're lacking, I think, especially in how social media is mismanaged today, we're lacking safe spaces to disagree, but respectfully, to seek knowledge. Because, like, I ask people questions about shit that I'm never probably going to do, but I'm learning something. If I can make a connection between two other people who might be interested, I feel like I've done a service to the world. So I just am a very inquisitive, curious person. I know that's one of the reasons why you and I vibe so well. But, yeah, I definitely agree that we're lacking in these opportunities to just connect and learn and share with one another in a way that's going to, in a way that's not going to be so toxic. So let me ask you.
And piggyback on, remember your question, because I want to answer whatever question you have. But, you know, when I worked with women who and men who had experienced sexual trauma, you know, one of the things that I found that was so destructive to them being healing or starting their healing journey was secrecy, was the idea that they couldn't talk about their abuse. They couldn't talk about what happened to them to put some context to it, to put some understanding to it, you know. And I have found that that philosophy and that principle extends to the wider sexual realm as well. We do each other no service by not having the space to dialogue about these things.
And of course, I don't know if this was set up good damn interviews, but my next question actually was, what is it about the role that excites you the most? Actually, in the preliminary questionnaire that I sent you, you said that the thing that excited you the most was playing a role in creating safe spaces for my people to explore. That's the most exciting part. So, I guess piggybacking off of what you just said about working with trauma victims and the secrecy that comes along with it, and I'm guessing the sense of condemnation and shame that they're harboring, why do you feel like, again, the work that you're doing with the feminists, the work that you're doing in the workshops, your consultations, and your future line of product offerings, how are you helping people to explore their appetites while also lifting the burden of this shame that they're carrying?
So that's part of the reason why I started with the workshops, even while I'm still in development for the product line and some of the other offerings I want to make, because I think that seeing people who look like you, or who share your experiences, whether they're cultural, ethnic, or even regional, like being a brown girl who came up in Brooklyn, like there is a energy, there is a support that you feel when you're hearing the words of someone who shares something with you. And so when I looked at the landscape, I feel that I don't believe that in any way that I am like the immaculate alien. Like I didn't drop down where, you know, there are plenty of other brown, educated, you know, Black women who might be from the Caribbean, who came up in an urban center, or who, you know, moved somewhere. Like, I'm not unique in that regard. So I know what it's like to walk into a sexual space and look around and wonder how I will connect with people in that space. Because on the surface, we look like we had nothing in common. You know, luckily, I was in a community that was, while on the surface, we may not have shared a lot of characteristics, they were very open and very supportive and very willing to have dialogues that in some ways, I feel we would see some real shifts in American culture if we were able to do that outside of the BDSM world. Being able to have honest dialogue with white people about race play and what that means, and is that something that should be accepted? How do we do that? How do we do it in some kind of healthy way that does not feel destructive? All those kinds of things. And the fact was, these were conversations that they were willing and open to have without diminishing my experience and my history and my understanding of how that dynamic plays out. And I look at that and I think about how many other areas do we struggle in as a country and as a culture because we cannot create the safe space that allows us to have these honest kinds of dialogues. Like, think of the struggle that we have just having it amongst our own. Just having conversations about sex and relationships and what that can mean without the heavy load of respectability politics and patriarchy and misogyny and misogynoir and all these things bleeding into the conversation. So, yeah, so I'm very excited about, you know, because I do believe that when you see something in the world that is deficient and then you touch on that passion to make it different, I feel that there is a huge amount of benefit that can come from understanding power dynamics and power exchange and other elements within the kink world. And I feel like I am excited about the possibility of recreating that for other people who look like me.
Of course, you provided such a beautiful answer. I don't really have much to add there. I do have a transitioning question, though. Mm-hmm. When I think about the world of kink and all the wonderful nuances at play, I remember a conversation you and I had at the beginning of our friendship where we were talking about vanillaism and how vanilla sex, vanilla play, is just another player. And for a lot of types of play, it's the foundational aspect of the play, or it's like the gateway drug, so to speak. You know, vanilla sex is good. It's still good sex. There are a lot of people having vanilla sex and it's bad, and they're blaming the aspects that are vanilla when it's not it. Like, vanilla sex can be powerful, it can be beautiful, it can be overwhelming. It can be very, like, I've had a partner before, and it was some of the best sex I've ever had in my life, and it was the most vanilla sex I've ever had in my life. So, in that same context of really good sex providing a lot of variety, a lot of flavors, a lot of nuances and levels that people, I think, should be more curious about exploring, I want to know about some of the challenges that you face, not only in opening up your clients and your partners to the different flavors, but having people as individuals see themselves with their different sizes, shapes, and colors, and still being seen as sexy and desirable.
So let me tell you that, you know, it is interesting because there's two parts of that question that stand out immediately to me. The first part is people have sometimes can take an attempt to stifle what they see as being free. So it is interesting to me when I hear conversations or feedback from potential sexual partners where there's this idea that because I am open to experiencing these other things, or if because I have experienced them before, then that means that I'm going to demand these things from them. The idea that just because I'm comfortable flogging someone, let's say, that means that any man that I ever sleep with from now until, you know, 2028 has to expect that they're going to come home to get lashed. I'm like, that's not how this works. You know, to your point, whether the sex is vanilla or whether it's chocolate, rum, raisin, grape nut, like without intimacy, without connection, without communication, it will suck either way. Just because you're kinky does not mean that you're having great sex. Like, it doesn't. And the same way that just because you're having vanilla sex, like, there are some days when, quite frankly, I don't want to deal with the giddy up. There's nothing wrong with wanting the physical intimacy and touch of your lover, however way that comes out. And sometimes it's about adding an experience, adding a flavor. And other times it's just about connection and having a new or a different way to connect to your partner. So I would like to say to all the men that, yeah, just because somebody might have a interesting kink or may have a predilection does not mean that you need to restrict their sexual options to all these things that you're not comfortable with. Those are two different things.
Now, let me ask, if I could take a wild guess, again, if I'm putting myself in your shoes and I'm empathizing with you based on what I know about you and what you share with me, I know that you're trying to create these safe spaces, you're trying to help people get in touch with themselves, get in touch with other people that they love and really are interested in sexually, but also it's about intimacy and connection with oneself and with other people. So I would imagine that you're seeing a lot of different types of ways that people engage with the myriad of flavors available in terms of BDSM and sex and play and connection and conversation. So what is it about this work that feeds your sort of daily inspiration to get back to it every day? Because like I said, you have a day job.
I would tell you it is seeing the growth in people. Like the first workshop that Afimidis did was for Steak and Blowjob Day. Because, you know, one of my favorite holidays. So the whole point of Steak and Blowjob Day is the idea that Valentine's Day had been co-opted by the Hallmark and the Doves and has been made into this production and is all these things that men are supposed to do for women. That is this one-way non-reciprocal change, right? And while many women don't feel that way, we at least have the acknowledgement that, yes, if you were to look at commercials or you see these shows, or you see the ads, yeah, you would think that it's all about women sitting back and getting all this love, right?
Yeah.
However, that doesn't meet the need of women to share love and to share affection and to be just as loving and caring towards the men in their lives as they want the men to be to them. And so while Steak and Blowjob Day kind of started facetiously, I would love to see it evolve into this opportunity that women take to not have the whole pressure and commercialization and money part that modern Valentine's Day has come to mean to so many people, but to reconnect to what the actual holiday is about, which is about love and appreciation, particularly romantic love. And so it was really cool looking at people talking about creating a sensual experience, creating a sensual gift for someone, and seeing the illumination in their eyes. Like seeing them get excited about planning something for their partner, seeing them getting excited about thinking about sex creatively, thinking about how they could create this experience for their partner, and the joy that came from that excitement. So it's kind of like, yeah, who wouldn't get like, well, I don't know, I can't speak for other people, but it's exciting to me. I love seeing that. I love seeing people feel joy, anticipate pleasure from their partners, from the giving and the receiving from their partners. So it's just very rewarding for me.
Now let's contextualize that, right? So again, a feminist, again, this is for me, mm-hmm. as someone who is very sex positive and I'm not going to say I'm like deep into kink life, but you know, I know myself and what I can do well, but I'm also...
Don't worry, I have a Kink 101 workshop coming up and I have one for men called, you know, How to Be a Dom. So, it's coming.
See, I'm glad you brought it up. And we're going to get to that in just a minute. But you're having these events, you're creating these spaces so people can talk about it. You know that there's a void in the overall kink community at large. And so, people like you and me and others who are going to be on the show very soon, we're creating these safe spaces for people like us, whether they mm-hmm. grow up in very orthodox, Catholic, Christian, whatever type of homes, very traditional environments, or even those who don't. Those mm-hmm. just finding ways that we can connect, because the biggest thing that I've had to learn, particularly about my own sexuality and the acceptance of those around me, is just that, I mean, at the end of the day, whether people want to demean it or not, the BDSM community is about really good foreplay and really good sex. Consensual.
And clear sex. Communication. Clear
communication, intention, and boundaries. Because, and the difference is that I find that people outside of the community, even those who are very judgmental or whatever, it's like, more than likely they're fucking. And if they're probably not fucking that well, but they're having the sex, they're just not having, and we're having sex. It's just that you have one group of people who is in touch with what they want and they try to give that also to their partners. And you have another community who, I don't know. But my point in bringing this all up is you had a hashtag in one of your posts for a feminist that I've just been showing over for the longest, which is the title of this episode, Inventing Black Sex. So we get the context. We're building up this episode. We're at the climax now. What is the story behind this hashtag and what does it mean for you in terms of how you've interpreted it and how you apply it to the work that you're doing with the feminists?
So Inventing Black Sex came out of what really was an amalgamation of two or three cultural events all happening at the same time. So, you know, one, as you were talking, we talk about the different approaches people have to sex, whether it's based on a orthodox hierarchy or that sort of thing. And I cannot separate the experience of sex from the larger social ills that we have. When we talk about sexism, when we talk about misogynoir, when we talk about colorism and racism, all of those things, because we are human and as humans, we are generally sexual beings, those things play a part. They play a part. Whether it's the discomfort in being openly sexual because of your fear that you will not be treated as a full human being, or whether it's that you try to posture at being sexually dominant because the social narrative is that, well, if you're not an alpha man who is, you know, hypersexual, then that means that you're weak somehow or somehow deficient as a man. We have built into conversations the idea that for men, sexual occurrence is what is the defining element of manhood instead of the quantity or the context of that sexual experience. All of those things play a part, right? So you had that kind of juggernaut happening. Then you had, you know, the rise of what I call the targetization of BDSM with, you know, the 50 Shades of Grey, where all of a sudden you had all of these authors who seemed to be very comfortable with the dynamic of BDSM when the woman is submissive and the man is dominant and they're both white. So you had all of that happening. And so you have the targetization of BDSM, you have the recognition of how all of these social dynamics play a role in the sexual realm. And then we got this president. And I was like, listen, homeboy basically said, well, I'm going to be president. I don't actually have to have any knowledge. I don't actually have to have a background in public service. I don't actually have to have any quote unquote book learning. I don't got to do nothing. I made this company. And just the sheer confidence that he could say, I can run this country without having any background or knowledge of any of the things that go into running this country. Yet I was just like, you know what? As a Black woman, it is very easy to hear the message that you have to be perfect in order to be recognized and respected as an expert, or in order to be acknowledged as a leader, that you have to be perfect. You have to have all this knowledge. You have to be self-assured. You have to not make any mistakes. You have to put out a perfect product. And in a lot of ways, that is a barrier to us actually progressing as women and as leaders and as entrepreneurs. And so I was like, you know what? God grant me, or the goddess grant me, the confidence of a mediocre white man. So if he could say that he could run the country, then you know what? Then I can say that I'm inventing Black sex, that it did not exist before Suzette Crichton came about. And so it's one of those hashtags that I use to remind myself that, you know what? We are all the experts in our own experience. We are the experts as to what feels good to us, what we want to experience, and who we want to experience it with. So whenever there is something where, you know, I want to remind people of that, that's when I use the hashtag Inventing Black Sex, because that's what we're doing, you know. And every day that I'm in this, I get connected and I see the work that's being done by other people who have come before me. you know, like King Conversations, they're doing great things. The Poly Collective, they're doing great things, you know, and there is room for us all. There is space for us all. And the work that all of us are doing are moving together to this place where we can invent Black sex, where we can decide for ourselves, what does it mean to be Black and sexual? So that's where that came from.
Now, of course, I'm all about context and framing our conversations in a very thoughtful way. Every episode, I want to at least hit two of our five topics. Love, sex, dating, relationships, and fuckery. So I know that when we're talking about play and kink, even the episode, inventing Black sex, I mean, not to say sex is automatically there, because it may or may not be.
Right.
You know, you could have a fulfilling, climactic play experience and never have oral, vaginal, or anal intercourse. So
there's a healthy, well-developed asexual community as well. Like, that is not the only way to have informed intimacy.
That's going
to
be the next episode. You come back. I like that. Okay. I didn't even think about that. I'm going to chill on that. We don't have you back in like a month for that. But what I wanted to know is, when you think about your client experience, not that I want you to break anyone's confidentiality, but when you think about the trends that you've observed, and particularly about the overarching sexual experience, sexual taboos, and sexual faux pas, and general fuckery that you find yourself annoyed by, some of the things that you encounter both, again, with your clients and then just generally in the social circles out here, what two topics resonate the most with you from that vantage point?
Well, fuckery is always number one, because it's fuckery. With sex and relationships really being a tie.
Okay.
It really is. So, but yeah, fuckery was clearly number one.
So tell me, why? So again, this is from the vantage point of you figuring out new and intimate ways to connect with your clients. It's one, they're paying you, so and two, I know you're very much a perfectionist. You want to make sure you're going to do a damn good job. But again, it's about education and getting people to have the courage to have the conversations, to have the connections, to have the sex, to have the boundaries that are important to them so they can grow as whole individuals. So you said fuckery, love, and relationships.
Yes. So I would say fuckery, because one of the things that I find really probably sad is the best descriptor, is that there are people who will never truly experience the depth and the potential that they have to experience sex in a spirit restoring way. And that spiritually restoring way does not have to be within a monogamous relationship. It doesn't have to be in a relationship at all, actually. It can be, but there is a place that when you are truly at peace with who and what you are sexually, that it can be something that you use to restore your internal world, your internal energy, and allows you to be in a place of peace and happiness when you're going out and dealing with people in large. But because of so many of the messages, the dual binds, the religious indoctrination, the social burdens, there are so many people who do not realize how much bullshit is built into the messages that they have learned about their sexual experience. Like, one of the things that, you know, we talk about when we talk about, for example, comprehensive sex education, right? There are countries like in Norway, for example, where they directly address sex as pleasure, that they tell kids, like, listen, you're going to want to do this because it feels good. Like, because orgasms are freaking great. So you're going to want to do this. As opposed to the methodology we use here, where we talk about anatomy, we talk about the structure of the body, we talk about all the things that could go wrong, we talk about all the STIs and pregnancy, we talk about everything that, but we never mention pleasure. We never say, hey, yeah, you're going to like when this boy sucks on your nipples. Like, you're going to like that. So how do you reconcile that you might want to do these things and you may not want to do it because you want him to be your boyfriend, or maybe you do want him to be your boyfriend, Who knows? Or her. But, or her. Or guess what? The same way that Peter can make you feel sexy, so can Paulette. Like, but we don't have those kinds of honest conversations that there is pleasure to be had. And sometimes the pleasure can be separate from what you might want in your heart, in your mind, you know, or your greater goals. Like, we don't do a good job of preparing people for the idea that they could be sexually attracted to something that might be uncomfortable for them to be sexually attracted to. Like, we don't say that, yeah, while we're telling girls, be strong, be independent. Well, how does she reconcile that desire for a man to put his hands around her throat and choke her out with this idea that she's supposed to be this boss bitch? You know, and so I feel like, and it's the same thing for men. There are so many men that I've seen who are like, okay, well, my girlfriend wants her to choke her out, but I just want to be cuddled. And they feel shame. They feel shame because they don't find it sexually arousing to physically dominate their partner. And I feel like both of those spectrums are wrong, that maybe we should be focusing on telling people that you're going to want to do the things that make you feel good. And feeling good can be physical. It can be emotional. It can be spiritual. It could be all of these things. So you get to decide where and how you want to experience this. Who and when do you want to experience it? And I think that if we have those conversations, we can also have a very different conversation around consent. Because then it's not a matter of boys trying to quote unquote convince a girl to give it up or try to take it from her. You know, it's about you know what you like. I know what I like. And we can have an ongoing conversation about what feels good and when we want to stop and it just be respected. But I feel like we continue to give narratives that undermine that kind of healthy dialogue between people who want to engage in sexual activity with each other. Even the heteronormative perspective that we're having here, and of course we're doing that because, you know, there's only so many combinations we can talk about. We only got like X amount of time. Right. But there are people who only feel connected through sexual activity with more than one person. So their desires are not any less valid or any less relevant or any less real than someone who can only experience that kind of sexual release by themselves or can only experience that with one other partner. There is room on this planet and in the experience of life for people to gain pleasure and to gain orgasms and to gain connection without us having to shit on everybody's method. So that's what I call fuckery. Because I feel like there's a lot of salty ass people walking around in these streets because they are not getting the sex that they want. I feel like an orgasm or two would really help with their day-to-day.
I am in complete agreement with that. If I was to have, say, 5 orgasms a day, I'd be a happy man. So let me...
Listen.
Let me also ask you, though. So, again, out of the 5 topics, love, sex, dating, relationships, and fuckery, when you think about the truth that you want to continuously live out loud, which of those 5 for the person you are right now at this very moment and the strengths and weaknesses and opportunities that are before you, which of those 5 challenge you in terms of where you're most vulnerable right now?
Ooh, dating. I can tell you that. Dating is my biggest like area of struggle. I'm still wrapping my head around it. I think it's a compilation of reasons. One, you know, any city that you live in, there's a flavor to the city. There's a flavor to dynamics. So I'm still trying to figure out DC game, whatever that is, the DMV game, because it's very different here.
Very.
The thing is, I don't think I was emotionally ready for the focus that people put on how people look. There is such attention paid to the visual presentation of people, that I think the opportunity for getting what you want and finding what you want is lost. For example, I feel that attraction doesn't happen in a vacuum. Like, people talk about attraction as though it is this thing that just you either have it or you don't. And that's not the case. Attraction is based on a variety of things. Things as base as your smell. Like, guess what? You have a personal odor that is marked by your genetic code And so there are going to be people who, for whatever reason, find your natural scent more appealing than other people. Like, that's just science, right? Don't even have this dialogue about that. But people don't factor that. Like, okay, yes, guess what? If you see somebody and they may not look the way that you think they might look, that doesn't mean that they don't smell the way you want them to smell. And in sex, odors is everything. Like, and so it's been interesting because I've made a lot of male friends here. And I very much enjoy their company. I think they're awesome people.
Thank you.
You're welcome. But it has been, it's been a interesting experience trying to reconcile, my ego to the lack of dating up, because so many people here are like, oh my gosh, dating is everywhere and you can date everybody and there's men everywhere. And I'm like, that has not been my experience. I meet men and we end up as friends. Like, I am shocked at this. But I am still figuring out, because I know part of that is me. Part of it is what I bring into the equation, what I bring into the social situation. And I recognize that for me, there are things that are barriers for me connecting. Like, because I am an introvert, I don't like, you know, base conversation. Like, when you say dumb shit, it irks my soul. You know, so like, for example, you might be attractive, but then the moment you're like, yeah, that female, like, oh my God, I dry up like the Sahara. Like, I can't even reconcile that. And I understand that I have to develop a wider tolerance.
You don't have to
facilitate.
Nah.
Well, but it does add a wrinkle in making the kind of intimate connections that I'm hoping to make. I also know that there are compromises that I could make that I'm not willing to. Like, for example, I could be less open about sexual liberation, kink, and my appreciation for a variety of sexual things. I could pretend to not have the sexual knowledge that I have. I could pretend to not be as self-aware. I could do that. I choose not to, because the kind of sex that I want to have requires a level of emotional maturity and vulnerability and willingness to dialogue. And I can't do that if I start off with the pretense that I am different from how I actually am. So, you know, part of it is just reconciling those things, trying to figure out, you know, how to play this game. And it doesn't help that I don't have patience. Like, you know, when someone says, I want to see you, and I say, okay, I'm free Tuesdays and Thursdays between 6 and 8. I feel my job is done.
And I would agree with you.
I have given you the opportunity. I've told you what it is that you need to do to make it happen. If I also have to say, okay, you're going to get dressed. This is what you're going to wear. This is where we're going to meet. And I will say that I am very comfortable. Maybe it's because of my experience in the BDSM world. I'm very comfortable with personal power. So if you give up that power from gate, you might never get that back with me. I'm not one to turn down free power. Like, you know, so it's like, do I miss sex? Do I miss intimacy? Of course I do. Am I searching for that connection that I can have with other people? Of course I am. Do I require an exclusive relationship in order to do that? No, I don't. But that being said, I believe that I have one personal rule, and that is I fuck the people I like. Like, I need to like you. And so I'm like, I think there's a lot of people. I do. I feel like I will only fuck people I like. I have to like you as a person. And if you are fucking people you don't like, that's not my ministry. I can't do that. There is something to be said for the experience of sharing your body and sharing your sexual self with someone who thinks you're a cool person, who thinks that you're a nice person, who thinks that you're funny, who thinks that you're smart, who thinks that you're just really cool. There's something to be said for that. And if you don't feel like your partner likes who you are, then you have some choices to make about whether you're okay with that. Because some people are, and that's great. Like, some people, sex is very masturbatory for them. And there's no judgment in that. There's nothing wrong with that. Not every sexual experience has to be this deep, intimate bonding connection. However, I know that I like to bring a playful spirit to whatever I do sexually. And I just find that keeping that spirit, having that open and safe and inclusive space with somebody, that what I find to make it work for me is for me to have some liking of that person as an individual. Other people have different criteria, and it's all about being honest with yourself about who and what you are as a sexual being. And the moment that you can live in your truth in that fashion and you're having the sex that you want, then it's all good. But just don't make up stories trying to put color to it. You don't need to have these rules and obligations and stuff like that. I believe that, you know, I belong to a lot of these single groups, and I see so much conversation about whether a guy pays for a meal or whether y'all take a trip or whether you do this or do that or do the third. And what I find is, you know, if you're fucking somebody who likes you, maybe they won't care about, you know, getting you a Popeye's $5 chicken box. Maybe they won't care. Popeyes. Why? Because they like you. You know what I mean? Maybe they don't want you to be hungry because they like you as a person. You know, so that's kind of where I see it.
So since we're focusing on you, the woman behind the business and the movement, tell me, when you think about the legacy that you want to leave behind in terms of the impact that you want to leave on your clients, on those who attend your workshops, just the overall BDSM community at large, and particularly for people of color, what are some of the things that you want to be known for with the work that you're doing right now?
What I will be known for is creating a different dialogue about sex and sexuality. It is a complex and layered dynamic. It is joyful. It has been allowed to flourish even within a history of oppression and hate and restriction. And there is power that we can take back and that we can have in exploration and acceptance, that we don't have to use the tools of the colonizer in order to create our own reality, our own sexual reality. And so at some point, when people think about sexual imagery and positive sexual imagery, imagery that is elegant and connected and beautiful and respective of all our physical differences, that they will think of a feminist, that it will be brave and bold and allow people to see desire in ways that perhaps they didn't see it before. So that would be my legacy.
Now, keeping in line with the theme and name of our show, The Book of Huey, if you could add your concluding thought about, you know, everything you talked about, black kink, connection, mm-hmm. vulnerability, openness, connection with oneself, sex. Mm-hmm. You got your own kernel to, you know, our body of growing anecdotes and wisdom. What would your contribution be to today's episode?
I would say two things. One, we always have the opportunity to invent black sex. We have the opportunity to invent our sexual experience, to make it what we want it to be. And it is through the integration of who we are as people. Like, stop seeing sex as this thing that's separate from who you are as a person, who you are as a human, who you are as a man, as a woman, as non-gendered, as binary gendered, however way you may feel. There is an integration and a connection with your physical self that should not be ignored. The second thing is, we have to control our perceptions, because the personal is always political. It always is. And so the images that we use, how we create it, how we generate it, whether it's through podcasts, through blogs, through pictures, through websites, through workshops, however way that is, we get to shape our narrative. And there is power in that narrative. There's power in the whole integration of who you are as a person with your sexuality and how it is visually and displayed within our art, our media, and our experience. We should be able to connect with our porn as much as we connect with our poetry. And so that's what I would say.
I like that. That's it. For myself, one thing that I've been sort of ruminating on the last few days, and particularly preparing for this episode, and now that we're here recording it, I would say, even in my own personal journey, when I really start to chew over and really think about the areas of my sexual experience and what I either wanted or didn't want from my sexual experience, when I accepted the vulnerability in it and became more open to the idea of getting past something you were alluding to earlier about, like, the guilt and the shame or the fear of rejection from a partner. Mm-hmm. As I started to become the king of unfuckability, I had to see the beauty in that frustration, the beauty in that opportunity, that when I became more open about it, particularly with lovers, and said, hey, this is something that I want to do or I don't want to do, and having that be seen as an opportunity, not just to fuck a certain way, but to connect at a deeper new way, my sex life became that much more powerful and beautiful and pleasurable because things were ironed out ahead of time before it became an issue, before it became problematic, because it was about the connection and not just getting a nut off. You know what I mean?
Oh, I know exactly what you mean. I mean, one of the most powerful sexual experiences I've had in my life involved no body fluids.
Wow.
But it completely transformed how I saw myself in the sexual space.
Well, I appreciate you, Suzette. We're winding down. I have three quick, final, short questions for you. The first being, what can we expect from you and the feminists in the near future?
So we can expect several more workshops. Talk Dirty to Me, a how-to workshop, will be occurring on March 25th. Tickets will be on Eventbrite on Saturday, March 2nd. In addition to that, we are working on the creation of some other media projects. So I'm hoping to have a storybook out with a focus, basically bedtime stories, and they'll all have a very kink focus to them so that people can be imaginative when it's time for bed. So those are the two main things coming out with the goal to have a product line by the end of or the middle of 2019. So next year, hopefully, we'll be able to have some equipment for people.
Now, for everybody listening, how can we stay in contact with, follow, like, comment, share, just get involved with the feminists?
Please go to Instagram, follow me on Instagram, follow me on Facebook. Both of them are at Afemidis, which is A as in apple, F as in Frank, I as in ice cream, M as in Mary, I as in ice cream, D as in dick, Y as in yellow, S as in Suzette. So the names, they're both the same on both Instagram and Facebook. Facebook is where the events are. So if there are any local events, you'll be able to see and get first dibs. Instagram is where we are trying to create original content. Any photographers or models who are interested in participating in some of the visual work that we're trying to do, please reach out. We're always looking for people who are looking to expand the visual offerings that are out there, and with the goal to have some gallery showings and coffee table book by the end of the year. So,
now, last final question for you. For anybody who has their own brand or a community and they're wanting to say, hey, I'd love to host a workshop with you or invite you to my community of, you know, black, pink, poly people or whatever, how can they get in contact with you?
Afemidis@gmail.com. Feel free to email me. I'm one of the hallmarks and what's written into my business plan is about collaboration, creating and expanding the community that already exists. Always looking for other like-minded people to do good work with. And I'm always on looking on the ground to see who else is out there teaching and learning and spreading good vibes and good sex.
We're out of here, folks. Special thanks to my guest host and homie, Suzette Crichton, founder and owner of Afemidis, for being on this week's episode, Inventing Black Sex. Also, which I don't know, is I have my own Dora Malaje, and she's one of the officers in the program. We talk all the time about my goals and when I'm fucking up or when I need to be challenged. She's right there making sure King Chulito has it all popping.
Exactly. And also, if you are interested in kink coaching or in exploring sexual development, you can reach out as well. Thank you so much for having me, Huey. I'm sure between you and I, somebody will be having some great sex.
I hope it's me, too. But this is Julito, a.k.a. Lil Big Daddy, a.k.a. El Grande Papa Julito, the regal debonair god and the king of unfuckability. Thank you for tuning in, everybody. Be sure to check us out at thebookofhuey.com. You can subscribe and tune in on iTunes, Google Play Music, YouTube, Stitcher, Blueberry, SoundCloud, and CastBox. Follow us all at The Book of Huey on Facebook, where we have a fan page, a discussion group. Leave us a comment, a review, suggest some topics. You can also hit us up on Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, and ask FM if you have any confidential questions. Thanks, everybody. Peace out.
On behalf of the Book of Huey podcast, thanks for tuning in. Talk to you next week. This is your announcer, Rebecca Lee, signing off. And remember, folks, Y'all, I love me some Suzette. Literally every time we see each other, she gives me a spanking. With palm, flogger, whatever's available. As a fellow kinkster, hedonist, and purveyor of earthly pleasures, and as a future collaborator with Infimidus, this episode was near and dear to me. The biggest takeaway for me from today's message is stop attempting to separate your sexuality from your humanity. They're part of the same whole. Also, I'm reminded of this quote by the author Junot Diaz, where he's referencing vampires. He says, "There's this idea that monsters don't have reflections in a mirror. And what I've always thought isn't that monsters don't have reflections in a mirror. It's that if you want to make a human being into a monster, deny them, at the cultural level, any reflection of themselves." Deep. He goes on to say that he was inspired before he died to make a couple of mirrors so that kids like me might see themselves reflected back and not feel so monstrous for it. Invent black sex, Suzette. And keep making mirrors, y'all. Hold them high. We out here.